Good morning. I'm joined by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Hi, Julie. Was it snowing when you came in?
It was just starting
just
to snow. A little bit.
Well,
it doesn't matter, though.
It's the winter. Pretty soon. In fact, you and I were talking off air about how busy people in your business
are right now.
Now, why are you guys? You should be home by the fire. But no, you've got a lot of other things to do.
We got to get ready for spring.
Yeah.
We've got...
What do you got? What keeps you so busy?
Well, the Master Gardener Core course just wrapped up. 200-plus Master Gardeners who have, folks who have gone through 48 hours of training and education at the U, and actually at the Arboretum. And they are now going to become Master Gardener volunteers and be out there volunteering to teach people how to garden properly and helping them answer their questions.
Answer a lot
of
questions.
All those sort of things.
Yeah.
Well, Teresa, she's a Master Gardener. Sure. I was a Master Gardener way back when in Hennepin County and state director for a while, too. And also, this is the time when we start having horticulture days, which, by the way, is a great way to get some really good in-person education from Master Gardeners and educators at the U. They're all over the state. You just have to, figure out if your county's holding one or not. I'll be up in Isanti County in March and also in Chisago County at those two horticulture days doing some speaking. So hopefully I'll get to meet some of our listeners up there.
And the resources like the university website. But if you're just a novice, if you want to begin to be a gardener, don't be intimidated.
No,
these folks are really helpful.
Yeah, super helpful. That's one of the things Master Gardeners strive for, and we do too in Extension as educators, is we always want people to feel like they can ask questions and not feel intimidated and not feel like their question's a dumb question, because we like to learn right along with them. So
that's right. Good
we're
point.
Always interested to hear what people have to say.
Well, I'd like to say that Smart Garden Show is brought to us every week by our friends at By the Yard Patio Furniture.
Awesome. Thank you.
Who are going to be, I'm going to stop by and see them today, at the Home and Remodeling Show.
Cool.
We're going to ping a few folks a visit there at the U.S.
We'll
Bank Stadium.
Give them our best.
I will. Thank you. Yes.
We appreciate that.
By the Yard. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but we would like to invite our listeners, as usual, to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of lawn or garden question, here's the number, 651-989-9226. Call now. We've cleared the lines. Or send us a text, 81807-81807. Here's a good question. Just came in. Is it better to use distilled water for all the houseplants so I don't have to guess which ones I should use it for?
Yeah, well, distilled water is a good option because it's, of course, not treated with anything. I would suggest adding a little bit of liquid fertilizer or powdered fertilizer, just make sure it dissolves properly at about half strength of the recommendation when you do water. And you want to fertilize houseplants when they're actively growing.
What's the deal with using certain tap water?
What's the deal?
on plants with that have been, what can I say, treated with
like
water
softener. Fluorine or, oh. Well, the water softener has some salts in it. And so one of the things with city water in particular is that it's treated with chlorine. It's treated with, I think the proper term is fluorine. And chlorine, if you fill up a pitcher or a watering can and you set it aside for a day or two, that chlorine will dissipate into gas.
Oh, it will.
So it goes away. But the fluorine does not. Mm. And that we do have plants that are sensitive to that. Also, with softeners, those salts, as well as fertilizer salts, if you over-fertilize, can collect in the leaves of plants and create some burning along the edges of plants and also do some damage on the roots, too. So you want to be – that's why we recommend half the strength of fertilizer. Just keep it really diluted and then only fertilize when the plant is actively growing. That's when it needs those extra – that extra boost of nutrients. And then using distilled water, RO water, reverse osmosis water, is also good too.
Yeah.
So if you have that in your house or if you get it at the grocery store, it's pretty cheap. And I did that for, a long time. I would haul 6 gallons of that RO water from the grocery store until we finished our garage and I was able to wheel in our rain barrels into there to use that for the sensitive plants primarily.
Let's go back to the phones, Julie, 651-989-9226. Wes is calling from Afton. Hi, Wes. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm better than good.
Awesome.
Oh, here in Afton now. So
Afton's beautiful.
It is. It's nice. Question for you on oak tree limbs. Is it too late to cut them or trim them for oak trees?
No, you can go ahead and do that. Oaks, the time of year that we do not recommend trimming, in fact, we avidly say do not trim them, is between April and June, because that's when oak wilt is most likely to infect a tree. So now is fine. Now is actually a pretty good
time. So what you're saying, any other time except April through April, May, and June.
That's correct.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. We have a great website, too. I'm glad he brought this up, mm-hmm. called My Minnesota Woods. And it is, it's got, I thought of it because on it, it has a little graphic that shows the oak wilt risk. So you can go to that website if you're kind of scratching your head thinking, when was that Julie said? You can go to My Minnesota Woods. They also have awesome tree and kind of woodland information about, you know, for people at big woodlands or little woodlands, and people who have a lot of different trees. It's a lot of a great education there. So it's called My Minnesota Woods, University of Minnesota, from our forestry department.
I bet we'd be asked about that before the show is over.
Great website.
Our texter says, are magnolia trees good in Minnesota? If so, which one do you recommend?
Yes, there are a lot of different magnolias. A Royal Star magnolia is one of the most popular and is very hardy. I think it's – and some of the other ones, I want to say – oh, boy, I'm drawing a blank now. But take a look at our Plant Elements of Design database, which is on our landscaping section, or send a – you could go to the Arboretum, call the Arboretum Library, and they'll tell you the magnolias that they have on property.
That would make sense.
Trying to think of what they are. One is pink. I'll look it up. I'll check it during a break, and I'll come back with some of those.
But before we do break, I want to get Clarence of St. Paul's question answered. Good morning, Clarence.
I've heard that rainwater has nitrogen in it. Is that possible?
If it's been collected from, say, anywhere that there's been kind of that there's possibly been plant material like gutters, runoff, that kind of thing, it may have nitrogen in it because it's taking along the plant materials, or those plant materials are breaking down as they're sitting in that water, might have some nitrogen in it. I wouldn't count on it as a major contributor to that. It's always best to add that. Add a little bit of fertilizer if you're going to be using that rainwater. It can have some organic matter in it, too. Mm. So it really depends on where it's collected from.
All right. You do your little research there, and we'll take a break. By the way, there's a line open if you want to ask your lawn or garden question to Julie on the phone, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Some light snow, some fog, even some mist reported in the Twin Cities. Our CCO temperature reading 24 degrees. We'll be right back. And good morning. Good Saturday morning. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show. Danny Long with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota.
Good morning.
She's a busy person these days. And we have
yet to elect her
to come in here and do some more work for our listeners.
This is fun.
It is fun.
I like doing this.
Yes,
yeah.
We appreciate it. I know our listeners do, too.
And I got a list of magnolias.
Oh, you do. Let's hear that.
Actually, I'm going to refer the person to Magnolias for Minnesota. It's on our extension garden site, and it's under trees and shrubs. So that's extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, go to yard and garden, go to trees and shrubs, and you'll see if you scroll down Magnolias for Minnesota. And some of those that are recommended are the star magnolia, the royal star magnolia, Leonard Messel, the Merrill magnolias, cucumber tree magnolia. There's also some smaller ones called Anne and Jane and Susan.
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. And boy, if you can get out to the Arboretum when those magnolias are blooming, it's unbelievable. It's one of my favorite times of the year out there. It's early spring. They, of course, flower before they leaf out. And be sure to get out there and take a look at it. If we have a spring like last year where we had a long period of cooler weather, the flowers hung on there for a long time. Campus, also St. Paul campus. If you live near the campus, come onto the campus and look at down at the mall. We've got, you know, groups of magnolias all over. They're just gorgeous. As you can tell, I kind of am a fan.
That's great. It's good. I'm glad you found out about that. That's many choices.
Magnolias from Minnesota is the name of the publication.
651-989-9226. Text is 81807 for your lawn or garden question. Diane in St. Paul has been waiting. Diane, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your program.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question about two rosemary plants that I brought in from the garden this past fall, and they're growing in a west window, but in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the top shoots, about 2 to 3 inches tall, have developed a coat of white powder that looks just like fine snow. What have I got?
Well, it could be a couple things. White powder on leaves indicates like a kind of a mildew.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is I know that rosemary is sometimes susceptible to spider mites. And so what I would recommend is, or other pests like that. So I would recommend taking a look at that a little bit closer and see if it's an insect that you see. If you spray it, and this is just for kind of determining if it's mites, you're looking for webbing on it, the spider mites will produce a fine webbing. And sometimes it's hard to see. And so if you spray it with a little water, you'll see then you'll be able to see if there's any webbing.
Okay. Thank you. Good luck.
Oh, bummer.
Not good.
It's hard to keep those rosemaries over the winter. Some people are really good at it. I am not. I had spider mites on mine and other assorted issues. Ugh.
Not good.
It's a bummer.
651-989-9226, 651-989-WCCO, if that's easier to remember, or send a text, 81807. I have some Mexican sunflower seeds from a friend's plant in the fall. When should I start them inside, texter says.
Well, they grow pretty quickly. Sunflowers are best sown directly into the soil, though. You could try some of them in the house to kind of get a head start, but most packages, if you read sunflowers, they're sown directly into the soil when the soil's workable. Other than that, if I were going to start them early, I would start them maybe 6 weeks before you could plant them. And if you're in the metro area, that would be roughly around Mother's Day or so, about April 20th. That's my mom's birthday. That's how I remember that. And that's our last frost-free date on average. So a lot of people will plant around Memorial Day weekend, and that's a good rule of thumb as well.
Let's go back to the phones, Julie, 651-989-9226. Dave in Coon Rapids is next. Dave, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hey, thanks. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Two questions. One is an oak question. One is an arboretum question. On the oak, I trimmed up oaks last early winter, late November. And one is it's got to be about a 50-year-old bur oak.
Sure.
All twisty and a lot of character.
Yep.
And I had one large limb that was dying, cut that off close to the trunk, and there's still open space in there where, you know, it must have started rotting or something, you know, right to the trunk. It's not solid wood all the way across. Do I need to plug that with something at this point?
No, it's probably best to just let it keep healing on its own. We used to recommend things like wound paint and latex paint and things, but research found that it actually kind of delays the healing of the plant,
sure,
so leaving it
sure.
is probably better.
But with this, you can actually poke your fingers in there. It's an actual cavity, and that's what I'm wondering is, I mean, that's wide open to bugs.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going. I think you probably will have maybe, you know, chipmunks or something in there. There's probably bugs in there already if it's rotting. If you have any issues with it, have a certified arborist come out and take a look at it. You know, particularly when it's a favorite tree, like you've mentioned, and a really old tree, that's always a good bet. But trees can tolerate some rot like that and still be structurally fine. But it's always safest to have an arborist, invest in an arborist to come out and take a look. Sometimes cities have an arborist, a forester, who can come out and take a look too. So you might want to check with your city offices.
And then second quick question. I'm in Anoka County. Do they have plants at the arboretum that will not grow north of the cities here? I mean, when I go down there and look at plants, do I need to be really careful about the fact that they're, you know, 20 miles south of me?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I don't think for anoka necessarily, but that being said, it's always good if you find a plant that you really like, it's best to look up and find out what its hardiness zone is. And if you're in zone 3A or 3B, whatever it might be at that point.
Yeah, I think it's 3B.
3B.
4.
Then, yeah, so then you might just want to take, you know, an extra, if you want to be really extra cautious about that. Some plants will do fine, you know, even in 3B a little bit. They're kind of on the, you're kind of on the fringe there. But definitely look it up if you're going to buy a plant.
All right,
it's great. Always the safest
thanks.
Bet.
All right, Dave, thanks right. very much for the call.
Yeah, good
thanks
questions.
For listening, too.
Thank you.
651-989-9226. Don is calling from Oakdale with a question for Julie. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good, morning, good. Thank you.
Great. Say, I just recently purchased a house in Lake Elmo, and a contractor was there helping me do some work. He noticed that there were some leaves that were on the ground, looked like banana peels, and he said those are dangerous for dogs. Do you know what kind of trees I have there? And what that might be?
I do not.
Okay.
That's tough. The best thing is to have the tree itself, not the leaves necessarily identified. It's too bad he didn't mention what the tree was.
Yeah.
Or have somebody take a look. You can send a photo in to Ask an Expert on Ask Extension, and we can see if we can identify it for you. But we want to see a picture of the tree, not just the leaves. So if you can do that, maybe you want to do it this spring even. There are plant lists that that have lists of plants that are poisonous for our pets, and they are on the ASPCA list as well as I think also the Minnesota Public Health site has one too. But yeah, you can definitely take a look at those once you identify the tree properly. So to reach us on Ask Extension, just go to our garden site at extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, go to yard and garden. And then if you scroll down to the bottom, it'll say Ask Extension. And there's an email opportunity there where you can put up to 3 photographs. You can attach those to your email and that will come to a master gardener or myself. And we'll see if we can identify them for you.
Because you take care of Rosie's dog. I mean, that Rosie's your dog. And
yep.
You're careful with that.
Yes. Yeah. And there are plants to be concerned about. A lot of the plants I've heard about more, though, are house plants or tropical plants.
Sure, right. Yeah.
Not so many of our plants. There are plants. I mean, there are plants that if a dog eats enough of it, they'll get diarrhea or they'll vomit or something. But they're not. It's not going to kill them.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's take a break.
Yeah, happy note.
We have another half hour of the garden show to go. So if you have a question, call it in or text it in, 651-989-9226. Text number is 81807. 24 degrees, a look at that forecast coming up.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show presented every week by our good friends that make the best patio furniture in the whole world, and that's By the Yard. See them at the home and remodeling show today, too, as a matter of fact. 24 degrees, Julie Weisenhorn in the studio this morning. Julie, as you can see, a lot of texters, a lot of callers, too.
Yeah.
So let's get to it. Let's
Sounds
see.
Good.
Richard has been waiting there in Waseca with a question. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. We have a magnolia bush that's about 5 years old, and I've been told that you have to be real careful pruning those. You have to do it at the right time.
Yes.
When is the proper time to prune that?
The proper time to prune it is after it's bloomed, so pretty quickly after it's bloomed. If you prune it after that, you'll end up pruning off the flower buds.
Yeah.
So, not yeah. too early, same not with too late. Lilacs. Anything that's a spring blooming plant, you want to prune it right after it blooms because it's otherwise you're going to be cutting off the very reason that you planted that tree or shrub.
Thank you, Richard. If you want to send a text to Julie, 81807. Let's see. Jean is calling from Stillwater. Jean, you're on CCO.
Yes, I have 2 concerns.
Okay.
One of them is the last spring, the Lord landscaped my yard.
Okay.
And it was dandelions, Creeping Charlie, and Violets, wild violets.
Okay.
And for the first time in several years, there were bees in my yard.
Oh, okay, great.
And they were of all sizes and all shapes mm-hmm. and all colors.
Sure.
And are they all, when honeybees are described, what do honeybees look like?
Oh, boy. I would suggest taking a look at photographs because there's, or, you know, going online and looking at that, there's a lot of different kinds of bees, and it'd be hard to describe them on the radio for you.
Yeah, it would be, sure.
But it sounds like you had a lot of pollinators visiting those plants, which
That's
is
good.
Terrific. Yeah. Sounds like native bees, bumblebees.
Good deal. Thanks for the call. 651-989-9226. Let us grab a text here if we can. You know what? They're coming in by leaps and bounds.
Pouring it.
Let's see. We did that. We did the magnolia. A lot of magnolia questions today.
Yeah, somebody has a Merrill magnolia. That's fabulous tree. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I have a flowering, texter says, crabapple tree, 15 years old. It's getting fewer and smaller leaves. I see some white greenish fungus on the bark.
Boy, hard to say. If it's smaller leaves, it might be under stress. And the greenish greenish fungus on the bark is a lichen. Sometimes that can indicate that there's an issue, but usually it's not. Best thing to do is if you're concerned is to, again, get an arborist and take a look at it or a tree care company.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones, Julie. Matt is calling from Minneapolis. Matt, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I got a question. We have some deer hunting land up in northwest Wisconsin where we've cut in a lot of trails and a large camping area.
Sure.
We're looking for some type of a cover material, like a clover that will bring in deer but won't grow really high so we won't have to go up and mow.
Okay, that'd probably be like a white clover. Red clover's quite tall. White clover is shorter, and it can take your foot traffic as well if you're out walking those trails. Deer love it. Bees love it. So you can buy that seed in quantity. I'm not sure exactly where to buy it, but you can certainly go online and look for a supplier. You're looking for white clover, not red clover.
Yeah, the bees do love that, don't they?
They do love it. Yeah, it's a great plant for them. It's an early long-time bloomer. And if you do mow it, you know, the one or two times you might mow those trails just to clear them, it'll mow just great.
All right.
Come right back. It's a perennial. It also helps add nitrogen to the soil.
Yes.
It's a legume.
Speaking of thanks, Matt. Speaking of nitrogen, Lee in South St. Paul has a question. Hi, Lee.
Yes. I have a question. I'd like some clarification on the nitrogen, nitrogen and raindrops. It's my understanding that since nitrogen is so prevalent in the atmosphere that when water molecules form, they attach themselves to nitrogen atoms, if you will, and that's where you have the nitrogen attachments to raindrops.
I think you know more than I do about that, Lee.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure about that.
I have heard, because we've talked on the car show about nitrogen in tires people put in.
Right.
And there's nitrogen in the air everywhere. So.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure about that, but thanks for the comment.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. He's scientifically minded.
Something to look into.
Lance in East Bethel is next. Lance, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Nitrogen may not be nitrogen that's available to the plants. That's the only thing.
Oh,
it might
okay.
be in a different form.
That could be the qualification.
Yeah.
Hi, Lance.
Good morning. I got a bunch of geraniums out in the garage.
Yeah.
I've been saving them
too.
Every year. And when would be a good time to start watering them, bringing them back to life? And how far should a person trim them back?
Well, if you start to see growth on them, and if you start to, I would say you could move them in March, move them into a sunny window, and then trim off any dead areas. And you can cut them down quite a ways. I would say it kind of depends on the growth that you have and the form of the plant and how dense it is. And you can bring it down to healthy green tissue, and anything that's dead or hollow or dry or anything like that, you could certainly trim that off. So you just give it a nice form so that it starts out the year in a nice shape, kind of cut off the long gangly branches.
Yeah, because they're about 5 years old, and some of them are as big as washtubs.
Wow. Yeah, so you could probably bring those down a fair amount.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Lance, thanks for the call. Lance leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. If it's easier, send us a text 800-387-8187. We were talking about the Master Gardener program earlier today, as we do once in a while. And someone wants to know, besides the hours of training, do you have to take a test?
No test. You have to be interviewed in order to be accepted, and you go through an interview process, whether formal or informal, depends on the county. Each county handles that a little bit differently. Everybody goes through the same, you know, same process, but it's just whether it's a phone call interview or if it's an in-person type of interview. Once you're accepted into that, then you go through the training. There are quizzes. Because our classes are both available in person and online, and you can do a mix of that. Kind of depends on how your schedule is working out, and there are quizzes of 10 questions or so at the end of each module. So, but nothing that's meant to stump anybody.
Good.
I think you just need to get a passing grade on it.
All right.
But there's no exam.
Good question. Let's see. Here's interesting. Should we try to remove a good size hanging hornet's nest that remains out on a limb on our maple? We thought it would come down.
You could take it down now. They don't reuse those nests, so they won't come back to it. But, yeah, you could certainly take it down now. There's nothing in it.
Would you go over there and do that and help them with it?
I would do that, yeah.
Okay. Just wondering.
Yeah, you could take a bag and just, you know, paper bag, knock it into the bag and throw it right in the bonfire or in the garbage or whatever. Stamp on it if you feel like it.
And run.
No, there's nothing in it.
651-989-9226. Frank in St. Paul is next. Frank, you're on CCO with Julie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Question on an oak tree, for one thing. I have a lot of oaks in my yard, and I had a clump of three a couple years ago, and one just gave way and fell. And I had an arborist come out and remove it, but it left an opening in the bottom by the trunk. And he said, just watch out for mushrooms. But I've got squirrels in there right now that are starting to dig that thing out and nest in there. I'm just wondering if that could affect the strength of the tree.
So the tree is still standing?
Yeah, there was a clump of three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and one of them gave way and fell.
Oh, I see. So it was a clump tree, a clump form.
Right.
Okay. I wonder if that might happen, I don't know, though. I mean, squirrels will get into anything. I guess I'd keep an eye on it and see if are they just stuffing it full of nuts, or are they living in it, or are they having babies in it?
Yeah, you know, there's an opening halfway up.
You might want to cover it if they're not in there.
Yeah,
they'll try to get in there anyway, though. They're tricky little devils.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, keep an eye on it, and then I think in that case you might, you know, you might cover it if you're concerned that they're going to be, if they're digging things out of it and they're, you know, causing a disruption to the tree, you might want to dig it out. They're not going to eat through the tree, I don't think. But yeah, that's a pickle.
They're kind of tough little.
Yeah,
critters.
Yeah. It's my friend Bernie in Africa has elephants in his community
now,
garden.
Now there's a big problem.
Yeah. And we have squirrels, so.
The elephant in the room
the
pest, is literally.
Pest is very relative to where you are.
All right. Julie, we have to take a break here. I see, looking out our window, it is snowing, at least in downtown Minneapolis, maybe where you are as well. We'll get back to the phone calls and your text messages here on our Smart Garden Show. Light snow, fog, mist, 24 degrees on CCO. Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO Radio, brought to us, of course, by our friends at By the Yard. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is here answering questions. Like you said, off the air, we've got...
What a diverse bunch
really
of questions.
Really diverse questions today, which is great.
Yeah,
we appreciate
it's awesome.
That.
People are really thinking.
651-989-9226. Pat is calling from Cold Spring.
It.
Pat, go ahead. Thanks for calling. Hello, Pat.
Oh,
Pat is
I think we lost Pat.
Pat's gone. However,
probably
we do have
probably in a low zone.
You know, we do have just a ton of text messages. You want to grab something there, Julie, because we have
sure.
You know,
yeah. So somebody has a question here. That's a complicated question, but I think I can answer it pretty quickly. I have cleared an old grove to plant a new grove north side of farm for windbreak. I am thinking of planting purple leaf plum hedge, Nanking cherry, arborvitae, quaking aspen, and American redbud in five rows. What do you think? Okay, so first of all, choosing plants that are suitable for the site are most important. So whatever plants you've decided upon, you know your site, look at the soil type, the exposure, the moisture levels, and choose plants that will thrive in those conditions, not just make it, not just survive. A couple of the plants that stand out, American Redbud, you want to be sure that you get the Minnesota strain. That is the one that's been selected for Minnesota. And you don't really say where you're located. So if you're north of the Twin Cities into Zone 3, that might be a little bit questionable as far as the hardiness of the flower buds. So you be sure to check that. The purple leaf plum hedge, if you're talking about the plant I think you are, I don't know if it's called a plum. It's a purple leaf western purple cherry, I think it's called. It can be very brittle. And so you might want to choose something or look into that. Again, I'm not sure exactly what that plant is. Nanking cherries are awesome. They make fantastic jelly. The wildlife loves them. Quaking aspen are great choices. Arborvitae are great choices. And so there's other options too. Red twig dogwood are terrific plants, or yellow twig dogwood, either one. Those are great plants, and they give you some of that winter interest against the arborvitae and the other plants. So that's a great option too. Things like ninebark, any twiggy plants that will also help stop that snow and work with the other plants to eliminate the windbreak. So choosing plants that fit the site, that's the most important thing.
Another texter wants to know if ashes, we get this once in a while, are good for the garden.
Only if you have very acidic soil. And so you have to do a soil test first. If you add ash to, say, if you're in the metro area, most of our soil, and granted there are pockets, but most of our soil is alkaline. And adding ashes is going to raise the pH of your soil, which is going to make it extremely difficult for some plants to be able to take up the nutrients in the soil. So be sure that you do a soil test before you start adding ashes to your garden. That's not a good practice, just willy-nilly.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Bill is calling from Minneapolis. Bill, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I have four trees in the back. They're about 30 feet tall. They've been here about 30 years. And I think they're pine. I'm not sure what kind. But I noticed for the first year this time that the bark on the bottom of the branches on some of the trees is coming off. Now, I feed the birds, and I throw some on the ground for the bunnies and the squirrels. But I've never seen this. It looked like they're stripped.
Okay. They could be stripped by squirrels or animals, probably squirrels. But the best thing to do, first of all, try to see if you can see the culprit, you know, in action. Examine it pretty close up. You could send a photo into Ask Extension. It's on the bottom of our garden webpage at extension.umn.edu, and then click on garden and then go to yard and garden. Scroll down to the bottom. You can do that, and we can see if we can analyze it. But also, if they're really trees that, and they sound highly valuable to you, then I would have an arborist come out and take a look at that. If there's squirrels, there's really not much you can do about it. You can't fence it. You can't spray them, nothing like that. So you kind of just have to live with it. And it can be detrimental to those particular branches. But it's going to kind of depend on the health of the tree and the severity of the stripping of the bark.
Okay. Good luck, Bill. Pat is back. Pat, good morning. You're on CCO with Julie.
Yes, good morning. Thank
morning.
You. The reason I'm calling is about my gardening from last summer. I don't know what happened, but my tomato plants didn't amount to anything. And I don't know, I put down cardboard between the rows and stuff to try to prevent the weeds from growing. Could
sure.
that have done something?
Probably not, unless the only thing that it might have done is if it started to break down quite a bit. Then that carbon in the cardboard could be sucking up the nitrogen in the soil if you did any fertilizing. If you didn't get any fruits on your tomatoes, it could be the variety that you chose. It might be the sun, the amount of sun that they got. Could be also the way that they were planted. It's hard to say on the radio what that might be. But I don't know if the cardboard, if it's not really close, it can take up some of that nitrogen, though, from the soil. The carbon uses it up to break down. That could be it. I don't think it would be that big a deal, though. So, sorry. I don't really have much of an answer there.
Thanks, Pat, for calling. We have texters as well, and we'll see how many we can get to before you take your leave, Julie. Here's a text that says, I saved my impatience seeds. When should I start them?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I've never started impatience before. Boy,
I think that's the first time we had a question.
Yeah,
like
I think you could just take a look online and see what it says. You could look at some of the you could ask a garden center, too.
Yeah.
You could call your local garden center and ask them.
Hollyhocks. Yeah, I remember growing up, my mother had hollyhocks. I tried to
old
grow
fashioned,
holly. Yeah.
Old fashioned plant.
I tried to grow hollyhocks, but never works. They grew in my mother's alley. What's your answer to that?
I'm getting stumped here.
We're finishing
holly,
big here.
Yeah, hollyhocks. It could be that the hollyhocks are, well, hollyhocks, some are annuals, some are perennials, and some are, and some act like perennials. They seed. There may be a treatment for hollyhock seeds. They might have to be soaked in water. They might have to be nicked a little bit, the seed coat. They might have to be in cold temperatures in order to get them to germinate. So again, sorry to recommend this, but take a look online or look up in a gardening book or contact a grower and ask them. I'm sorry, I don't grow hollyhocks.
Somebody, Julie.
Now I want to find out, though.
Now you more for you to do.
Yeah, more sleuthing for me.
Texter wanted a little clarification because I know you mentioned addressed the trimming of like the magnolia or the lilacs.
Right,
when you say, Texter says to prune after a bush or tree blossoms. Are you saying to prune when the blossoms are still on the plant or bush?
No, you want to prune within 2 weeks after the tree is done blooming. After all the blossoms have fallen off, you've got about a window of a couple of weeks to prune before it starts to set bud for the next year.
Okay. I think we have time for more. We're kind
keep
of
going,
doing a
yeah.
lightning round
Woo-hoo.
Here.
That's my lightning
Let's
bolt.
Let's see. Okay.
Pretty weak.
Wondering if you have done, we get questions about the winter sowing a lot here.
Okay.
A texter says, I'm trying it for the first year and planted a bunch of perennials. What are the best things to plant?
Oh, boy.
As a winter sowing.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a best thing to plant for winter sowing. Certainly things that can tolerate cooler temperatures might be an idea. Winter sowing, if anybody's wondering, is actually you're sowing it into a container and covering that container. People use milk cartons a lot of times, milk jugs, plastic milk jugs, and they cut away the top. Put the soil in, put the seed in, and it makes a little teeny tiny greenhouse. And then they seal it up, they tape it up, and they put it in a sunny location. And it actually will start to – it'll heat up in there. And it'll actually start to grow, and then you can transplant them later. It's a really neat thing to do. Bachman's actually has a great publication, at least they used to, on winter sowing. So you might want to take a look at that. I don't know if there's any best thing, though. I would imagine things that are cooler – can tolerate cooler temperatures like greens and cabbages and Brussels sprouts and broccoli, some of those that are cold crops might
You're
be
better.
You're
making me hungry. Hungry.
Hungry. Hungry.
We've got less than a minute to go, Julie. I've started impatience, somebody, a texter says, for years.
Okay.
Slow starter, so I start them end of February. So
there you go.
There's
Thank
your
you.
Answer.
Thank
yes.
you for that. Pansies are also slow, and so are sweet peas.
Teresa going to be here next week? No, you are.
I will be here next week.
You'll be here next week.
Yep.
Okay. And for those folks that did not catch the university website, give that.
Yes. So it's extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, go to yard and garden. And if you didn't get your question answered today, or if you think of something during the week, you can scroll down to ask Ixmael in your question or call a Master Gardener.
And we will see you with more questions and answers
next
week. Very good. Stay tuned next for a news break and get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. CCO temperature reading with light snow, 24 degrees. You stay with us on CCO.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.